welcome to episode 4 of the Flower Pot Pen. Well, we're at the end of February 2022 and just about to jump into March. While there's a definite feel of autumn in the air, it's still possible for us to get some hot weather here in Victoria. A good indication, though, that autumn is just around the corner is the appearance of the naked ladies that are popping up out of the ground where they've become naturalised along roadsides and in unused areas. Naked ladies, or Amaryllis belladonna, are a beautiful plant which is classed as a geophyte. All this means is it has an underground storage system, in this case a bulb. Other underground storage systems can be corms, tubers, or rhizomes, among others. When the temperature starts to drop and the days start getting shorter, this particular bulb sends up a single bare stem which flowers, then dies. After that, the bulb sends its leaves up so they can make energy to send back down to the bulb, which then goes back into its dormant phase over the hot months. These plants come from South Africa, and they are most likely brought over for the beauty of their flowers. They can be different shades of pink or white, with variations in the shape of the petals. Lots of plants that have become invasive or pest plants are from South Africa, as the climate is very similar. We'll just have to wait and see which of these plants becomes more invasive as the climate warms up. Even though they're considered invasive in some parts of Victoria, New South Wales and Tasmania, I think they're quite beautiful and last well in a vase, which is something I always look for in a flower. I have some in my garden which I love. While I can feel autumn in the air, the grass is still quite dry and brown in the paddocks around my house here in the western districts, so grass fires can still be a threat. The St Patrick's Day fires of 2018 are testament to that. Well, that's a night I'll never forget. March 17, hot winds blowing a gale from the north, celebrating St Patrick's Day. There's a high number of people here with Irish ancestry in the area. We had great music with a great community at the local pub. Then the local CFA members started getting messages of fire. CFA is the Country Fire Authority. Nearly 6,000 acres of farmland over 80 kilometres were burned and some homes were lost, but thankfully no lives were lost. Here in Australia, fires are always a risk, but that fact doesn't make a lot of difference if you actually experience. My thoughts go out to anyone who has experienced losses due to fire. In a future podcast, I'll take a look at fire-resistant plants that can be utilised around homes in areas of higher fire risk. Anyway, back to now. I'm still mainly just managing weeds and lawns, watering the garden beds, watering pot plants, deadheading roses and giving them a light summer prune. All this means is cutting off stems that have flowered back to either new growth, you'll see this as it's quite noticeable, a leaf joint or an outward facing bud lower down on the stem. The buds are the lumps on the stem that you see that are growing points. I have a look at the overall shape of the plant and cut back to wherever I think it will keep the plant in a compact, even shape with some good spaces to allow air movement. This helps the plant avoid fungal infections like the usual black spot, all those kind of things. If there's any rootstock growing out on the plant, that needs to be taken off too. These are usually stems that are much longer, coming from right down the bottom of the plant. It's best to get right down to the bottom of the plant and pull this growth off. Gross. It's not gross. Well, it's quite gross. Pull the growth off with your hands, pulling down and away from the stem. This is better than just cutting the stems, as it will pull away any growth points. This is a handy thing to remember for getting rid of any suckering growth. Any plant that has been grafted has the potential to send out growth from the graft, which can take over the whole plant. Now, on to some of the interesting things I've learned lately. First up, I've been enjoying a series by the British gardener Monty Don on television. Monty Don's American Gardens has been a three-part series on ABC television, and as the title suggests, he's been travelling around America looking at different gardening styles there. I've got to admit, American gardens haven't featured very highly in my consciousness. I pretty much assume they're not much different to Australian gardens. That's pretty much true, with a few exceptions. Now, garden styles is another topic for a future podcast. Well, probably quite a few podcasts. There's quite a lot of information to cover in that thing. But gardens in countries like America and Australia, places colonised by mainly European settlers, tend to take inspiration from older places like Europe, Britain and Asia. Some of the greatest environmental weed disasters are testament to that. Imported plants can like new conditions a little too much. Anyway, getting back to Monty Don's show. It was fascinating to see the vast range of climates and how gardening has adapted to those situations. In my opinion, the most American, in inverted commas, were the desert gardens, not dessert gardens, because that would be quite, yeah, we'll have to look into dessert gardens at one point. But anyway, these were desert gardens. Although the gardens of Florida and Miami came a close second for me. The arid gardens with cactus and succulents were breathtaking. One disturbing fact given, though, was that cacti are one of the most threatened taxonomic groups. Here's a quote from the International Union for Conservation of Nature. Almost a third, 31%, of the 1,478 species evaluated by them are classified as threatened. You can find more information about that on their website, IUCN.org, the International Union for Conservation of Nature. This is a group of both government and civilian groups dedicated to research and action to safeguard the natural world. Anyway, it was shocking for me to realise the extent of susceptibility to extinction cactus have. They also have a red list of vulnerable species of plant species of all types. One of the reasons given for the vulnerability, apart from climactic reasons, is the illegal collection of plants from wild populations. I suppose the lure of the dollar is too strong for some people. It's a good reason to be sure of the source of your plants. Well, that's also another topic for later discussion. I swear, when I started the podcast, I didn't have this many topics selected. I'm going to have to be more organised. If any of you, my much appreciated listeners, have anything you want to add to the discussion, don't be scared to leave a comment on my webpage, theflowerpotpen.com, and I'll see what I can do. While you're there, like and subscribe to my Facebook page, Francis Bryant Gardens, The Flowerpot Pen. Also, I'm on Twitter at PenGuards, the Flower Pot Pen, and I have the, as I said before, the blog at theflowerpotpen.com. Right, now for botany bits. This is the part where I talk about some biological fact, botanical fact about plants and how they operate. This time, I'm talking about leaf fenestration. That's spelled F-E-N-E-S-T-R-A-T-I-O-N. Basically, it's about holes in leaves. Most people are familiar with the Monstera plant. It's a popular indoor plant and it can also be grown outside in temperate climates. Its fruit is edible as well, which is why it's sometimes called the fruit salad plant. But back to its leaves. The large, thick leaves of this plant unfurl as soft, heart-shaped leaves with no holes. But as they age, they form their distinctive shapes, which gives them another name, the Swiss cheese plant. There's some debate about why leaves do this. These plants are rainforest plants, so it was thought it could be to allow for rainfall to fall through and not weigh down the leaves, or even so wind could blow through. A study done by Christopher Muir at Indiana University suggests, though, it is more to do with allowing the leaf to capture more light as this plant in particular climbs up trees from the understory and it only receives scattered sunlight. In short, it seems leaf fenestration allows a plant to receive as much light in shaded positions as a whole leaf does in full sunlight. This study can be found in the American Naturalist, volume 181, number 2, from February 2013, on pages 273 to 281. Or it's at jstor.org, which is an online library. The plant world is truly amazing. Well, that's about it for this episode. I'll finish off with thanks again to Jim Williams and Les Cameron at the Commercial Hotel in Toorang for their support in hosting this podcast. And thank you again for the use of your equipment. I'd also like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land this podcast is made on, the Kuré Wurrung and Gundudjmara people. Till next time.